Hi everyone, and thanks for listening to the podcast. Okay, so the last episode we talked about J.R.R. Tolkien, a little bit anyway. When I listened to the playback, I noticed a few things. First, I said, when I was talking about, you know, all the servicemen and stuff and thanking them for their service, I said man, and that's not right. I meant to say thank you. Men and women, thank you for your service, period. So anyway, and then another thing I noticed listening back to the playback, I probably got a little too nervous about talking about J.R.R. Tolkien because I didn't want to get anything about him wrong. I know enough, though. I could talk a little bit more about him. So I know he was born in South Africa. And he lived there until he was 3 years old. And what was intended to just be a vacation to England turned out to be permanent because his father had passed away. He had a younger brother, and his mother, she raised them by herself. She did move in with her family, but she had reverted to Catholicism, and her family had ended up disowning her, so she had to raise her two boys by herself. She ended up, she had diabetes, and back then, you know, in the early 1900s, there was no insulin, so a person with diabetes was expected to only live, you know, for a short time, and she only lived to be about 34, I believe it was, and passed away. At this point, Tolkien would have been 12 years old, but I'm kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit. She also had taught him how to read and write. You know, she homeschooled the two boys, and Tolkien was a very star pupil. I mean, he did really well. He could read and write by the age of 4, and he liked reading books. He didn't much care for, I read on his Wikipedia, it said that he didn't much care for Treasure Island, and Alice in Wonderland disturbed him, but he liked the fairy tales from Andrew Lang. They would end up being very inspiring for his future writings. He also lived in Birmingham. Well, it's called Birmingham now. At the time, it was called Sarehole, and in a Worcestershire village. Like I said, later on, it was called Birmingham. He also enjoyed visiting his aunt's farm, which was called Bag Inn. And of course, we know Bag Inn. I also should mention that when he was, I think he said it was like, he was a young child anyway. He was bit by a spider when they lived in South Africa. And people speculate that he might have been influenced, you know, the character of Ungoliant and Shelob was because of his fear of spiders, because of that experience that he had. He later wrote, though, that he had no recollection of that happening to him, and he said that he, as an adult, he had no ill will towards spiders. You know, he had no phobia of spiders. I mean, probably as much as anybody else, you know. I am terrified of spiders. In fact, Ungoliant and Shelob are one of the most terrifying creatures in his legendarium for me, because I can't do spiders. Anyways, after his mother's death, she had assigned guardianship of him and his brother to a Father Francis that raised the two boys, and he grew up in the Edge Bastone area of Birmingham. And if I'm getting any of these names wrong, I am so sorry. I live in a little town in Texas, so I don't know. Anyways, so yeah, the father raised the boys, and he ended up attending King Edward's School in Birmingham. And at King Edward's School, he and three of his friends, Rob Gilson, Jeffrey Beck Smith, and Christopher Wiseman, formed a semi-secret society called the TCBS, which stood for Tea Club and Barrovian Society. After leaving school, he kept in touch with his friends, and in 1914, they had a council in London at Wiseman's home, and this meeting was a strong dedication to his writing poetry. Yes, I kind of went and looked over his encyclopedia, or his Wikipedia, and I wrote down some stuff. So if this kind of sounds scripted, it is, because, you know, I needed to write some notes because I didn't want to get anything wrong here. In 1911, he had a summer holiday in Switzerland. And, you know, this trip really inspired him with what Bilbo went through in the Misty Mountains, you know. So I thought that was interesting. When he was 16, he met Edith Mary Bratt. That's, you know, his future wife. She was 3 years older than him. They would go to tea shops and throw sugar lumps at passerbys. And they were both orphans and in need of affection. So romance was, you know, bound to happen. And they decided they were in love, which I think is just so sweet. But Father Francis, he didn't like that she was older and she was a Protestant. And so the tensions between him and Father Francis, you know, caused him to start failing in his studies and stuff. So the father told him that he couldn't see Edith anymore until he turned 21. And Tolkien obeyed, you know. So fast forward to his 21st birthday, he wrote Edith a letter and she was engaged to someone else. He got on a train and went to Cheltenham to tell her he never stopped loving her, which is so romantic, y'all. And he asked her to marry him. And so she called off she was engaged. Yeah, I already said that. But she called that off and she agreed to marry him. After their engagement, though, Edith announced that she was converting to Catholicism, and because of this, she had to find other lodgings because the family friend that she was staying with was anti-Catholic. But anyway, he and Edith were married on March 22nd in 1916, and he wrote a letter to his son Michael in 1941 expressing an admiration for his wife for marrying a man with no job, little money, and no prospects except the likelihood of being killed in the Great War. And, you know, like I said in the last episode, he was a World War I veteran. So he was a lieutenant in the British Army from 1915 to 1920. During the Battle of the Somme, he contracted trench fever and was taken back to England, and many of his dearest friends were killed. Among them was Rob Gilson and Jeffrey Smith from the TCBS. Tolkien had survivor's guilt because after he went back to England, almost all of his battalion was wiped out. And during his recovery, he started to write the Book of Lost Tales. It was his attempt at creating a mythology for England. Throughout 1917 and 1918, his illness kept recurring, but he recovered enough to do some home service at various camps. During this time, Edith bore their first child, John Francis Rule Tolkien. On 16th of July, 1919, Tolkien was taken off active service. After the war, his first civilian job was at the Oxford English Dictionary. He worked mainly on the history and etymology of words of Germanic origin, beginning with the letter W. That's pretty cool. I mean, you know, he helped write the Oxford Dictionary. I just think that's really cool about him. During his time as a tutor at Pembroke College, he wrote The Hobbit and the first two volumes of The Lord of the Rings. So that's pretty cool. And he was grading papers, I believe, when he wrote The Hobbit, which is really cool because, I mean, I just think it's cool because you wouldn't think. He got bored of grading papers, and I think he came across one that was blank or something like that. And so he just started writing The Hobbit, which That is so cool how things just start, you know? Plus, you know, reading or telling his children stories, that's really where it started. But he just really started writing it down, you know? So, but anyways, in 1945, Tolkien moved to Merton College, Oxford, becoming the professor of English language and literature until his retirement in 1959. He finished The Lord of the Rings in 1948, close to a decade after the first sketches. Which, wow, you know, I mean, when he wrote these books, it took him his whole life to just come up with the story and everything for Lord of the Rings. And I just find that so fascinating. And also, and he even said, I think, once, if he would have retired earlier, he would have had more time to dedicate to his books. And he's always said that he wished he would have retired sooner. Him and Edith had four children: John Francis Rowell Tolkien, Michael Hilary Rowell Tolkien, Christopher John Rowell Tolkien, and Priscilla Mary Ann Rowell Tolkien. He would tell his children stories and write the letters from Father Christmas. There's actually a book published with these letters, you know, a publication edited together, you know, it's a Christmas book with these letters in book form, if anyone's interested in that. I haven't read it yet, but I'm really interested. I'm interested in everything Tolkien. Like I said, I just got done listening to The Silmarillion on Audible, and I want to dive deeper into some of his other stuff that has been published since his death. You know, things that Christopher Tolkien has kept going. And, you know, while we're talking about his family and about this kinds of stuff, I would just like to say about Christopher Tolkien, without him, we wouldn't have, you know, all of these writings. We wouldn't have Silmarillion. We wouldn't have The Lost Tales. And we wouldn't have the Histories of Middle-earth without Christopher Tolkien. So I used to kind of be on the fence about Christopher Tolkien, but now that I'm a little bit older and I see what he has actually done for his father, I don't feel the same way anymore. I used to feel like he was just trying to milk this franchise for everything it was worth, and then I got upset with him because of the way he was being towards the movies and not really accusing them of taking the story and trying to make money off of it, which they are. I mean, they stretched The Hobbit into three movies. And guys, that book does not need to be three movies. No way does that book need to be three movies. Maybe two. Maybe three if it would have been done better. Which I don't blame Peter Jackson for this. They didn't have a lot of time to do the script and to do the things that they needed to do. So it just felt like a rushed job to me. And not that, I mean, I still enjoy the movies. The way I feel about the Hobbit movies is nostalgia for me. You know, it felt like going home. It felt like seeing old friends that I hadn't seen in a while. You know, seeing Gandalf and Frodo and Bilbo at the beginning, and then going on this adventure with the dwarves and Bilbo, you know, younger Bilbo. And, you know, they were pretty good for what they were. They were fun movies, so. But they just did not need to be stretched out to, you know, three movies. But that's just my opinion. If you don't agree with me, then okay. But if you do, okay too. You know, I am not telling y'all to agree with me at all. But anyways, back to what I was saying about Christopher Tolkien. You know, I felt like he was doing the same thing with his father's work, you know, trying to stretch out and, you know, publish works with his father's name on it. I kind of felt like he was being hypocritical to the movies, you know. But now, looking back on it now that I see it, I'm grateful for what Christopher Tolkien did, no matter what his motivations were, because we wouldn't have all these writings from J.R.R. Tolkien. I am grateful for Christopher Tolkien for that. And I was sad when he passed away last year. So, but anyways, back to talking about J.R.R. Tolkien. He was part of another book writing club called the Inklings, of which C.S. Lewis was a part of too. It was through Tolkien that C.S. Lewis converted from atheism to Christianity, but it did upset Tolkien when C.S. Lewis joined the Church of England instead of Catholicism. C.S. Lewis nominated Tolkien for a Nobel Prize in Literature in 1961, but Tolkien didn't get it because the Nobel jury thought his storytelling was second rate. Like, what? What? Are you people reading the same thing I am? Because I don't think you are. Second rate, what? Okay. But anyway, when he got famous, he had to take his phone number out of the public directory. He and Edith, they moved to Bournemouth, a resort for the British upper middle class. Edith was proud of him becoming a famous book author. Rightfully so, you know, I mean, who wouldn't be proud of their husband's achievements? I know I would. I'm proud of my husband, no matter what, you know, just to someone, you know, to accomplish what J.R.R. Tolkien did. I don't blame Edith for being proud. But anyways, in their retirement, they enjoyed their children and grandchildren. But sadly, Edith passed on November 29, 1971 at the age of 82. And Tolkien had the name Luthien engraved on her tombstone because she influenced that character, which I think is just so, again, romantic. You know, their whole story is so romantic. I can't even with that. It's almost like a love story, a novel. It was made into a movie. I've seen that movie once, and it was really good. It was decent. I liked it. So, like I said, he had the name Luthien engraved on her tombstone because she influenced the character, like I said. And then when Tolkien passed away 21 months later, September 2nd, 1973, at the age of 81, he was buried next to her with Beren put on his tombstone. So, that's the end of Tolkien's life, and I guess that's going to be the end of this episode. I just, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Tolkien. I didn't feel like I did him very good in the first episode, so he deserves, you know, he had a pretty fascinating life, and he deserves, you know, someone to talk about him. You know, if I'm gonna do this, I need to do it right. So anyways, I'm gonna try and start doing these episodes every Friday at 9 a.m. Central Time, so be on the lookout for that. If something changes in the schedule, I'll let y'all know, but for right now, that's the goal I'm looking for. And next week, I will get into more of talking about the books and things, and then we'll just keep going from there. Hopefully, I can get into the movies, and we'll talk about the music and everything Tolkien right now, and then we'll see what I think up next to come up with. But for right now, it's gonna be all about Lord of the Rings, because I'm kind of going down a Tolkien fix right now. I do that once a year about, so I'll watch the movies and I'll take a whole weekend and binge all six movies, and then I will sit and I'll read or listen to the books on Audible. I wish Audible would sponsor me, but I gotta get some more listeners before that can happen. But anyways, and by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this in the last episode or not, but on Audible, Andy Serkis he has narrated the books. So, and let me tell you, he did such a phenomenal job. I forgot he was writing it until he started to do Gollum's voice, reading it. I forgot that he was doing the translations or the narrations until he started to talk for Gollum. And then it was like, oh yeah, this is Andy Serkis. He did such a phenomenal job. The only thing that took me out of it a little bit was when he would sing. He's not the best singer, but you also can't blame him for that, because there's really no tune written for some of the songs in Lord of the Rings and in The Hobbit. I didn't even realize, because I guess when you read it in your head, you don't sing these parts out to yourself. You read them more like poetry, I think. So Lord of the Rings, if they would have really stuck to the book and, like, put Tom Bombadil and all of that into it, it would have been a musical, y'all. But it's crazy. But it is a beautiful story, so, and it's why we're here. We're talking about it. And anyway, like I said, Andy Serkis translates. I don't keep saying translates. But anyway, he narrates the audiobooks on Audible. So go check those out. They are really good. And also, you can get The Children of Húrin narrated from Christopher Lee, which he did a phenomenal job. And I really wish he would have done more Tolkien's works. I wish he would have done The Silmarillion, because he did such a phenomenal job. But the guy that narrated The Silmarillion did a really good job too, so I can't complain. That's going to do it for this episode. I'm so glad y'all listened, if you're still listening to me by the end of this. Thank you for listening, and I will see y'all next time.